Good morning. Glad to see a nice number out with us this morning again. And beautiful day. It's sure looks a lot warmer than it is out there, but it's coming, like the sign says, it too shall pass. And hopefully before long we'll be complaining about the heat. That would that'd be all right too. But we're glad you're here. And I want to talk about pride this morning. I was reading a story one time, and this one fellow remarked that some egos are so massive that one must be the bride at every wedding and the corpse at every funeral. In other words, he or she always has to be the center of discussion, the one that everybody is talking about. I read that Adolf Hitler interviewed 30 men to be his chauffeur, and evidently he ended up hiring the shortest man who interviewed, just to make himself look taller, because Hitler was not especially tall. And so he hired somebody who was shorter than he, just to make him feel bigger. He had what we call little man syndrome. And that's a very prideful thing. I was working on the turbine floor up at Shinston, Harrison Power Station. And I was laying, we had the top of the turbine off, and I was laying on the bottom part of the half shell. And I was reaching under the rotor, I was trying to take measurements. And I felt somebody staring a hole in the back of my head, and there was this erector that worked for Siemens Westinghouse. And he was bent over watching me, and he had his shirt unbuttoned down here, and he had gold chains, and I didn't know this fella from Adam. And I said, "What do you need, little buddy?" And it was just an expression, but he got mad. And I didn't know why until I stood up, and I was about this much taller than he was. but he had a severe case of little man syndrome. I mean, everybody on the job was little buddy to me. It's amusing, but it's also tragic, because some people, their pride is such that everything in life is a competition. I know a fellow who's so competitive that he'll look at everybody's shoes when he walks into the church building, because he wants his shoes to be the shiniest. There's nothing wrong with shining shoes. It's probably a lost art. But, I mean, to make it a competition, how tragic that is, and how miserable somebody has to be that everything in life is a competition. But here's the sneaky thing about pride. A common malady as it is, it can exist within us, largely without our own acknowledging of it, without our recognition of it. One example we can read about in the scriptures comes from Hezekiah, the king of Judah. We know that Judah had a few good kings, and Hezekiah was one of them. Israel had all bad kings. But Hezekiah was one of the exceptions. He was one of the good kings of Judah. And we read about him in 2 Kings chapters 18 through 20. He had a very eventful life. We can read about him also in Isaiah and 1 Chronicles, Nehemiah and Zephaniah. He ascended to the throne when he was but 25 years old, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 29 years. And he was a righteous king. As we see in 2 Kings 18, 4 and 5, we read that Hezekiah removed the high places and broke down the sacred pillars, cut down the wooden images, and broke in pieces the bronze serpent that Moses had made. For until those days, the children of Israel burned incense to it and called it Nehushtan. He trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor who were before him. So the Bible implies here that Hezekiah was the best king that Judah had in a string of bad kings. So he was a righteous king, but he also had a problem with pride. He had seen God's great power in action and in the lives of those in Jerusalem. And so he was faithful to God in that he removed the high places, that is, these elevated places where pagan worship was practiced, and he cut down the phallic images that were worshipped so much by the pagans of the day, and which some of the Jews had interacted in. And you remember the bronze serpent that Moses erected in Numbers 21. When the people were bitten with the fiery serpent, they were to look upon this image and be healed. Well, they had turned it into an object of worship, and so Hezekiah destroyed it. And you know, I think that is one reason, this is kind of an aside, but I think that's one reason we do not have any of the original autographs today of the Bible. Because God knowing man, I think God providentially allowed the original autographs to disappear, because we would have, somebody would have turned them into an object of worship. We're to do what the Word says. We're not to worship the Word. We're to obey it. Now, we have some very old manuscript copies dating back into the first century, but we don't have any of the original autographs. And I think for the same reason that God, or the same reason that Hezekiah destroyed the fiery the bronze serpent. God saved Hezekiah and the children of God from Sennacherib and his army. And Hezekiah was then cured from his terrible disease, we know in 2 Kings 19, 35. It came to pass on a certain night that an angel of the Lord went out and killed in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when the people arose early in the morning, there were the corpses, all dead. And so Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed and went away and returned home and remained at Nineveh. Now it came to pass, as he was worshiping in the temple of Nisroch, his god, that his sons, Adrammelech and Sharezer, struck him down with the sword and escaped into the land of Ararat. Then Esarhaddon, his son, reigned in his place. So we see that God providentially allowed Hezekiah and the children to be rescued, be saved from the Assyrian invasion at this point. Hezekiah was stricken with a weakness, with a sickness, and he was going to die, and he turned his back to the wall, or he turned his face to the wall in his bed, and he prayed to God for his life to be extended, and God allowed him 15 more years. However, Hezekiah had a difficult time giving God the glory for the victories that he had. In 2 Chronicles 32, 25 and following, we read that Hezekiah did not repay according to the favor shown him, for his heart was lifted up. Pride. Therefore, wrath was looming over him and over Judah and Jerusalem. Then Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord did not come upon them in Hezekiah's day. But we know later that his children, his offspring, did suffer when in 722 the Assyrians scattered the inhabitants of Samaria. And in 586, when Judah was ransacked. You see, there's no such thing as a self-made man. And Hezekiah, at least for a time, was exhibiting this self-madeness. And this proves to us that even righteous men, righteous people, can struggle with pride. Secondly, we see that pride produced amnesia in the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar and his son Belshazzar. It's easy to turn to God when we are in dire straits. And I'm not talking about the band, you who are children of the 80s. Nebuchadnezzar saw the boldness of Daniel and the three Hebrew children back in chapter 3, verse 16 through 18. They refused to worship the image that Nebuchadnezzar had made of himself. And Nebuchadnezzar had them thrown, or was going to have them punished in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And he asked them very pridefully, "Who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from you, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O God, or O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up." They knew they would be rescued from Nebuchadnezzar, whether by death or whether by freedom from the burning fiery furnace. They were going to be rescued. They were going to be saved, and they were determined in their minds that they would not serve Satan. They would not serve Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar had seen God save these three men from the blazing fire. He threw them in. And after witnessing this miraculous event, he acknowledges God briefly. But his life is not transformed. He's like seed cast in the stony places in Matthew 13. He endures for a time, but he has no root within him. He has no staying power. He wasn't in it for the long haul. And sadly, that's the way so many new Christians are. They're on fire for the Lord. They finally come to an understanding about the Christ and why the crucifixion was necessary, why there had to be the shed blood of Christ. And they learn that they have to hear the gospel and believe it and confess the Lord Jesus and repent of their sins and be baptized, and they get it. But just as quickly, it seems like the fire burns out. And then you never see him again. That was Nebuchadnezzar. While walking on his rooftop one particular night, he says, "Is not this great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power as a royal residence for the glory of my majesty?" Boy, there's a fellow that's really consumed with himself. "This is Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power for the glory of my majesty." He seemed to have had a little more gloating to do. And in chapter 4 and verse 25, I'm sorry, I got to get the wrong page here. In verse 25, Nebuchadnezzar is told, they shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. Then shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. Nebuchadnezzar was eaten up with his pride, but God humbled him. He drove him insane temporarily, and he went out and he acted as if he was one of the beasts of the field. Howard Hughes, many of you remember, was a billionaire. He was a film producer. He was an inventor. He was an industrialist. But he was a paranoid recluse. He was so great in his own mind that he didn't want to be poisoned or contaminated by mere common people. He was crippled with obsessive compulsive disorder. And it all stemmed from his pride, because he was so great and everybody else was inferior. The son of Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, you would think would have learned the lessons from his father. I know I've talked to you, a lot of folks, about my dad. And my dad was a smart man and a hard worker, but he was not a perfect man. He made mistakes. Dad was smart enough to learn from his mistakes. And I had the benefit of learning from some of my dad's mistakes, mistakes that I saw him make, mistakes that he told me about in the past before I was a twinkle in his eye. But he told me about them so that I could learn. Belshazzar did not learn the lesson from his father, but he fell victim to pride as well. And we look in Daniel 5, verses 2 and well, 1 through 3. Belshazzar the king made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of 1,000. And while he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple which had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. They brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple of the house of God, which had been in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines did drink from them. So they had captured Jerusalem, they had sacked the temple, and they took the golden vessels back to Babylon, and to celebrate their victory and to gloat among themselves, they drank their devil's brew from the gold implements and the gold utensils that had been used in the temple of God. And that's when, down in verse 25 and following, we read about what the part that everybody remembers. A finger appeared to them, and the fingers of the hand were sent from God with this, and this writing was written. And this is the inscription that was written: Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. This is the interpretation of each word. Mene, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balance and found wanting. Peres, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. So because of his pride, he saw, finally, the handwriting on the wall. And he's told that God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. In other words, God is going to bring an end to your reign, Belshazzar. You've been weighed in the balance of God's justice, and you are found wanting. In other words, God's justice is heavier than you. You are lacking righteousness. And you farson, which is a different noun form of peres, he says, your kingdom is going to be given to the Medes and the Persians. And that's exactly what Daniel had prophesied in Daniel chapter 2 when Nebuchadnezzar had the dream and he saw the head of gold and the shoulder and chest of bronze and silver. The bronze and silver is the Medes and the Persians. And we read in verse 30, and that very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, which is the same as the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. That very night, because of his pride, Belshazzar lost his reign. Babylonians lost the kingdom, and Darius and the Medes took over, and the Persians, because of pride. So what about us? How can we identify if we have pride? How can I know if I am a prideful person? Just because somebody tells me I am, does that make it so? It might. It might not. But here's a self-help test. Everybody's into self-help today. So here's a self-help test. Fear. Did you know that fear in your life could be a symptom of pride? We find ourselves in fearful situations when we become consumed with self-reliance. We think that we can handle every situation that comes upon us. I don't need the crutch of religion. I don't need self-help. And we refuse to realize that some things are just simply out of our hands. And the remedy is this. This is from Proverbs 8:13, and it's from the English Standard Version. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. Pride and arrogance and the way of evil is and perverted speech I hate. Let me read that again. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. Pride and arrogance and the way of evil and perverted speech I hate, God said. We need to fear, that is, reverence God, rather than to reverence ourselves and think that we don't need anybody or anything. I've known people, some even Christians, who were too proud to accept help or assistance from their brethren, from their family members. They would rather starve. I've never known anybody that starved. They would rather go hungry than allow somebody to help them. Number one, that's foolish. Number two, you're robbing your brother or sister of an opportunity to fulfill their Christian duty. Another symptom of pride is entitlement. This is a pandemic today. This feeling of entitlement. We have minorities clamoring about how they were oppressed 200 and 300 years ago, and they want reparations today. Well, my Scotch ancestors were probably not treated the best when they came to this country, so I want reparations too. Ezekiel settles the matter once and for all. He said, the soul that sins, it shall die. The father shall not bear the iniquity of the son, nor the son the iniquity of the father. That's in Ezekiel 18:20. I don't think it's in your outline. In Romans 6:23, it says the wages of sin is death. It says that we deserve death on account of our sin. Do you want to talk about entitlement? There it is. Because we sin, we are entitled to death. But because of the grace and the mercy and the love of God, which Brother Rick so very well talked about this morning at the table, because of the grace and the mercy and the love of God, we can be given eternal life. So even though we're entitled to death, look at Paul's warning in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 13 and following. Paul says, "We, however, will not boast beyond measure, but within the limits of the sphere which God appointed us, a sphere which especially includes you, Christians in Corinth. For we are not overextending ourselves as though our authority did not extend to you. For it was to you that we came with the gospel, not boasting of things beyond measure, that is, in other men's labors." We're not entitled, he says, to take the credit for other men's labors. But having hope that as your faith is increased, we shall be greatly enlarged by you in our sphere to preach the gospel in the regions beyond you, and not to boast in another man's sphere of accomplishment. We're not entitled to anything but death. Pride makes us think we are. Pride makes us think that we are better than we really are, that we're better than someone else, that in the name of equality, we are actually superior. Now, if you want to talk about entitlement, just remember, we're entitled to death because of our sin. People-pleasing. People-pleasing is a sign of pride. I want to make everybody happy. That's the key to failure. I don't know what the key to success is, but the key to failure is trying to please everybody. You see, pride is a form of self-worship, self-preservation. We want the approval of others, many times, over the approval of God. Talked about why we don't practice church discipline like we used to in churches of Christ. Because we want to please people over pleasing God. Rehoboam rejected the counsel of the elders and preferred to please his contemporaries in 1 Kings 12 and verse 6. And so then he doubled the burdens on the people. Jesus said in Matthew 15:9, "But in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men." Because we want to please men over pleasing God. I've told you before, and I think you know me well enough now, I'll never pacify you with a lie. I may hurt your feelings with the truth. And it's not because I don't love anybody here. But it's because I love God supremely. Now, I'm a human being, and there are times when maybe I've been inconsistent. That's a very real possibility. There are times when you are inconsistent. But that's what maturity is. That's what growth in the faith is. It's becoming more consistent and more consistent in our abidance to the will of God. Paul wrote in Galatians 1, "For am I now seeking the approval of men or of God? Or am I trying to please men? If I am still trying to please men, then I should not be the servant of God." Hypocrisy is a form of pride. the elevating of our status and forgetting God's mercy, obtaining this holier-than-thou mentality and be quick to point out the faults of others. Oh, how we love sometimes to confess other people's sins. Did you hear about brother so-and-so? Did you see what sister so-and-so was doing? They don't have the gumption or the courage to confront it themselves. So what do? Run to the preacher or the elders. We don't have elders, so guess what? We like to be called a Christian, but yet we want to engage in things of the world. Yes, I'm a Christian on Sunday, but on Saturday night I might have been a drunkard, or I might have been shacked up with somebody sleeping with them out of wedlock. Might have been spreading a little gossip just because it was true. Not everything is true needs to be said. Finally, rebellion is another form of pride. And I'm thinking, of course, of the prodigal son. He knew better than his father. He knew better than his God. And he took his money and he ran with it, and his brother accused him of wasting it on harlots. But he came to himself. And he came back to his father. And by implication, he came back to God. Jesus said of Judas, "I speak not of all of you, but I know whom I have chosen, but that the scriptures may be filled. He that eateth bread with me has lifted up his heel against me." Judas is the poster child for rebellion and betrayal. And we can see from the examples this morning that pride is a destroyer of lives. And I could go on and on and on. But I would just hope that these examples are enough to perhaps awaken you to the fact that maybe there is some pride in our hearts. Maybe there's some pride in my heart. And do I need to consider some of these things? You know, we can pray for wisdom. We can pray for humility. Let's strive for humility so that God can use us in greater ways. In Daniel 4:37, it says in part, "Those who walk in pride, he is able to humble." God will humble us. God will see that we are humbled. He'll clip our wings, but he hopefully won't let us fall too hard. Pride is one of the things that keeps people from obeying the gospel. People don't need the crutch of religion, they say. But yet the same people that don't need the crutch of religion, they need to go to a self-help spa a couple times a year. The 4 hours a week that we spend in corporate worship is my favorite time of the week. Not just because I'm a preacher. It was my favorite time of the week before I started trying to preach. Because I know there's something out there bigger than me. I know there's a God in heaven. And he wants me to go to heaven to be with him. And he wants you to be in heaven with him. Swallow your pride. Let your life be about God. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and if you're willing to turn from a life of sin, if you're willing to turn from a life without Jesus, and if you'll confess his name, it would be my pleasure to immerse you in water so the sins that are leveled against you will be washed away and you start with a clean slate. It's the big do-over. If you are a Christian but you've not been faithful, take this opportunity to come back. If you need to respond, the front seats are open. take a seat on the front row, and I will come and we'll talk whatever it needs to be. We want you to leave here today ready and prepared to meet your God. Would you come now, please, as we stand and sing?